Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're now in chapter 8 of the book of Mark. We're in lesson 72. And at this point, Jesus Christ is in essence upbraiding his disciples for the simple reason that he told them about a spiritual matter, about the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod, speaking about both the civil government and the religious government of the people of Judah, and all they were thinking about is on a physical level, you see, instead of thinking spiritually, because all of his teachings were basically spiritual, and even the physical things that he gave them were always with a spiritual connotation, that is. And when they asked him about it or charged him with it, they did not pay attention to the spiritual content, and they should have been spiritually minded by then. And that's what he's saying to them. But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, because, you know, the reason among themselves, you know, because we didn't bring bread, you know, that's why he said that. And so he says to them, why do you reason because you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive, and they should have, nor understand, and they should have, is your heart still hardened? Now that's the nature of the problem, you see, that's the cause of it. And oftentimes this is where we find ourselves. If our heart is hardened for whatever reason, we are not going to perceive nor understand, no matter how much, you know, we're being taught, no matter how clearly it is being taught to us. You see, when you have a hard heart that is hardened, in other words, sort of, you know, you have an arthritis there, nothing goes through, you see. And many people find themselves in that way. You teach them, you expound to them, nothing goes through. They don't understand. You know, you look at them and you wonder, is anybody home? And that's unfortunately even the disciples of Jesus Christ at this time. They're still carnally minded. They're thinking about physical things all the time, and they fail to perceive the spiritual content behind it. And so he says to them, is your heart still hardened? You have eyes, but you do not see, and you have ears and do not hear. And do you not remember? Look how the disciples were acting at this point. After all the signs and wonders and miracles that he did with them, you see, they still were in that state of mind. Just like the people of Israel, as he told Isaiah. You know, they don't care much about my law, they're not walking in it. And to have an understanding of God, an understanding of the law, you have to obey it, you see. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All those things were lacking there. And so he said, well, they go their own way, they do their own thing, they couldn't care less about me. Therefore, we're going to put them on the shelf, in essence. We're going to blind them. Even though they have eyes, they're not going to see. They have ears, they're not going to hear. They have a heart, they're not going to understand. Now, these disciples of Jesus Christ, having been with him all this time, should not have been in this category, and yet they were. And how many of us are exactly in the same state of mind to this very day? How many people are really spiritually attuned to God? You see, they have ears to hear, to perceive, to understand, to comprehend. You look at them and you wonder, is anybody home? That's a very unfortunate state. And that's why Christ said, you know, broad is the way and many other people that find it. You know, they just go for the easy ride. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to use their brain. They don't want to use their heart and their ears and their eyes, spiritually speaking, you see. And it makes it very difficult. And so it was here with the disciples of Jesus Christ. And so he says, can't you remember all those things? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments did you take up? Then they said to him, 12. Well, they could remember all those physical details. Also, when I broke the 7... for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of fragments did you take up? And they said, 7. So he said to them, well, how is it that you do not understand? And he's saying the same thing to every single one of us. Because we all have the same problem. When our heart and our mind is not on God, that's the way we function. And most people that go to services, to church, you know, as I call it, you know, as a Protestant terminology, you go to church, you know. We are the church. We don't go to church, you see. And they go there, you know, you teach them, the teachers in many groups and organizations labor, you know, throughout the week preparing the food. They come and bring it to the congregation, and oftentimes when they speak to them, you know, they see those eyes. They don't, you know, they're not really listening. They don't hear. They don't comprehend. Some of them fall asleep, you see, and they don't get it. And that's been always a problem, because narrow is the road, and only few that find it, as Christ said, but broad is the way, and, you know, most people go in that direction. They're too lazy to use their brain, you know, the spiritual brain, to think. They're not hungry, they're not thirsty for righteousness, therefore they're not there to soak it all in, to absorb it. You see, their minds and hearts are everywhere but where it should be. And you see them when you go to services, you know, if you go there to really worship God, not man, and you're totally concentrated on that, and you're totally attuned, and then you look all around you, and you see that most people, you know, in their mind and their eyes are everywhere but where they should be. You see? That's what Christ is telling us. Is our heart hardened? We have eyes but we don't see, and ears and we don't hear, you see? And that's a problem, you know, with every single one of us, when we are too much carnal instead of spiritual when we appear before God. And so this is what he says to them. Then he came to Bethsaida, house of the field, and they brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. That is, the people that brought the blind. And so he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of town. He didn't want, you know, a lot of commotion there. Again, that was always his manner. And he commanded his servants to do likewise. And yet you find all those so-called faith healers. They might like to make a big show out of it. You know they're not of God. You see? Because he'd never done things in that manner, and he commanded us to follow in his example. And people are not doing it. Why? Again, you know, their heart is hardened. You see, their head is somewhere else. So they do their own thing. And so this is what he does here. He takes him out of town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands on him. And again, you know, you look at that and think, man, that's strange. Why would you do a thing like that? You know, all he had to say, just say, you know, be healed, and that's it. Because there were times when he said that. But you see, everything has a spiritual connotation. Until you study the Word of God and you know the law of God and you understand the symbolism from that point of view, obviously, you know, you'll read this and you think, man, that's silly. That's why a lot of people, you know, they read that and they say, well, I'm not interested in religion, you know, it's just for silly people. Well, they don't get it, they don't understand it. You see, and that's the way your reaction, you know, of anything you don't understand. And so he asked him if he saw anything. And he looked up and said, I see men like trees walking. Then he put his hands on his eyes again and made him look up. And some people would ask, you know, what do you mean? You know, he couldn't heal him the first time. You know, he still had to do something else. Wasn't good enough. You see, again, they don't understand it. That oftentimes the healing that God gives us is not necessarily immediate. There are times where it is just like that. It happens. There are other times, you know, certain time has to pass, you know, certain experiences, patience, faith, you see. And if we perceive that there isn't enough faith there on the part of a person, well, the process is longer of healing. So it's not always the same. And when you see that, you know, you begin to understand, to comprehend. You know, you become spiritually attuned to what is happening here and to the mind of God. And therefore, when those circumstances happen around you, then you understand. You don't give up and you don't say, no, wait a minute, you know, you're the Son of God, you're supposed to heal me, just say a word and that's it. And, you know, here you did what you did, took me out of town, nothing happened. Or at least, you know, I don't see very well. Well, what's happening here? You see? So an awful lot of things go into that. And when you sit down and analyze the situation and you consider, and you perceive, and you have the full, you know, full, thorough knowledge of the law of God, you begin to understand more and more the mind of God, how it works, you see, under different circumstances, and for what reason. And so this is what happens here. The second time, he was able to see very clearly, and then he sent him away to his house, because he was not a man of that town. They just brought him to that town knowing that Christ was there, but he told him, you go home, don't go back to town. He said, neither go into the town, nor tell anyone in the town. You see, so you go home, don't go to the town, and don't tell anybody in the town. You see, so obviously you're not going to go there because God was not interested in a show. You see, this was the God of Israel, this was the husband of Israel, and that's not his nature, you know, making a show out of it. And that's the nature of people, because they are attracting, or they want to attract, attention to themselves. That's where the problem is. You see, he was not interested in that. And now Jesus and his disciples went out to the towns of Caesarea Philippi. It's another territory there in the Upper Galilee. And on the road, he asked his disciples, saying to them, "Who do men say that I am?" In Matthew, we read that very thoroughly. It was covered up there. And here only just the essence of it. And so they answered, "John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, and others one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But whom do you say that I am? I mean, you've been with me all this time. What is your level of understanding? What is your spiritual comprehension of me?" And Peter answered and said to him, "You are the Christ." And obviously he said more than that. In Matthew, you read that, so we already went through it. We're not going to spend more time on that. And we'll continue in verse 30. "Then he strictly warned them that they should tell no one about him." Again, some people think, well, why not? That's a time to tell everybody about it. Like the people he told them when he healed them, "Don't tell anybody." And they would say, why not? And that's how the people generally of Israel and most human beings, you know, carnal-minded people always ask, you know, why not? You see? Why? Because they want to do their own will. That's a problem. Instead of saying, "Yes, sir." You see? I mean, I'd understand, but, you know, maybe I'll let her understand that. The first thing we want to contradict. We want to push the, you know, our own view, our own concept, our own ideas. You see? Self, 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 self. I just told them, don't. That's it. Here's a reason for it. You see? If you want to know, you ask him. And if he's not willing to tell you, well, that should be enough for you. So he warned them, don't go and tell everybody. It was not the time. He was not interested in mobs, you know, all over the place. And especially in this point of him being the Christ. You see, when you think about it, a lot of the people of Israel, even though there were multitudes that followed him and things like that, but not all of them have the same, you know, level of understanding, spiritual understanding. And the principle always with God is that he does not reveal his truth or his secrets, but to his servants who are attuned to him. You see, others who do not have the capacity to understand it, or they have in another agenda, you see, they would have created a problem. Just like we read another place, he was not interested in being chosen as their leaders who's going to lead them, you know, against Rome. And that was the attitude of many. Well, he's the Messiah, the conquering Messiah. We're going to make him a king, you see, even by force. And he's going to lead us into battle. He was not interested in that. So you can see, you know, all kind of reasons for him to warn his disciples, that is, and he strictly warned them. "I don't want anybody to know, you know, that I am the Christ, even though you understand it. Because you know the state of mind of many people." Verse 30, then that is 31, "And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again." Now that was totally contrary to their understanding of the Messiah, including the disciples. What do you mean? You know, you're going to suffer and be killed. That's not the reason why you came, or, you know, the way we understand the scriptures. That's how they thought. That's why also Judas got offended at him. "You're supposed to come here and deliver us from Rome, from bondage, from all these sufferings and miseries, and you tell us you're going to be killed. You know, are you really the Messiah? You know, what's wrong with you?" And that's the way, unfortunately, many were offended at him. That's the way they thought. That's the way Judas thought. And his disciples, you know, did not comprehend it. And Peter, you know, was rejecting, in essence, this plan of God at that point. And he says, "No way. Nobody's going to take you. I'm going to protect you, you see, because you are our leader. And we're not going to let anybody kill you, because the will of God was not on their mind. And they did not fully comprehend the scriptures either, thinking that he was coming in their day to deliver them. And therefore, they were not about to have, you know, God dictate how things are going to be done. They wanted it done their way. And when things didn't go their way, many people forsook Jesus Christ. They said, well, he's just an imposter. He didn't do what he said he was going to do. And after that, you know, many of them repented, turned around when they realized, no, he was doing it in his own way, in a certain way that we did not understand. And that's when the disciples begin to preach him. And again, they continue with the signs and wonders and miracles, and they realize, well, we just didn't get it properly. And it's his work after all, you see. And even the disciples, for the longest time, they had a hard time with this, almost until the end of their days, where they thought, well, he's coming any day. You know, he's coming tomorrow, the day after, you know, in a couple of years. You know, behold, the door, you know, the Lord stands at the door, as Paul would say, and all the others. So all of them still, until the end of their life, they did not fully comprehend the scriptures. They had their own agenda, in essence. And that's what happens when we've got our own agenda, then the truth of God does not penetrate through our minds and hearts. You see, we decide what is truth, and nobody's going to confuse us with the facts anymore. We all function that way. So he has to warn them. You know, in contrast to your thinking and I, you know, and ideas and that of all the multitude and what you want and what your agenda is, that's not the agenda of the Father or me. My purpose at this time is not to deliver you from Rome or the nations or from yourselves or all the nation of Israel or all the nations of the earth. It is to come and die for you at this point. And only 2,000 years down the road, I'm coming back. And of course, you tell people that, you know, and just lose the faith. They give up. You see, because we're human beings. We don't live 2,000 years, so we don't have that much patience. We want it here, right now. And so this is what he tells them. And he spoke openly in verse 32, this word. And then Peter, that's the reaction of Peter, you see, because Peter is not about to lose the leader. He's not about to have the will of God being done, but his own. He's not about, you know, losing the chance of being redeemed from Rome. He's thinking more about the physical redemption, not the spiritual. And so Peter, in essence, what he does, that's a reflection of all the disciples and the way people generally function. That's when, you know, almost every given generation, they all decided in their own mind for God. You see, they don't live, you know, leave God. That is, you know, they don't let God make the decision. They decide, no, God is going to send Jesus Christ in our day. We're going to make this decision, and they give dates to the people to follow them, and they lead them astray. And the disciples fell for it too. They too were, you know, telling, in one sense, you might say, the people, you know, it's going to be around this time, certain things are going to happen. And, you know, they've begun to probably even quote dates, you know, and then nothing happened. And people gave up the faith. You see, that's not of God, and that's the way it's going to be. And when it is of God, everything is going to fall in place in the right time. And so Peter does not go along with that. He doesn't like that idea. The disciples don't like this idea. The multitudes don't like this idea. And that's what, to begin with, he told them, don't even tell anybody. And so Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Imagine that. Peter, I know better than you and God. And whom do you think you are, you know, to change and alter our dreams and hopes, you see, for what is going to happen? Well, that shows you human nature, and it still is to this very day. And any time we sit down and come up with dates and decide that we know prophecy, a lot of people are that way, fools, and they never get it. Every generation they've been doing that, yet they exalt themselves on their own side, and they know exactly what events are going to happen and when, and they give you dates and places and people and all that, and they deceive many. You see? That's a part of the deception that Christ was talking about, that even his own disciples are going to be guilty of it to a degree. They come in my name, the same that I am the Christ, and shall deceive many. Well, the deception on the part of the disciples that became the apostles was that they told the people, Christ is coming in our day, and we know, you know, we are the disciples, we know, you know, if we don't know, you know, nobody knows, you see. So they decided in their own mind. And so Peter, you know, is reflecting this attitude at this point. And a lot of people, in that sense, when we set dates, when we decide this and that and the other thing, that's in essence what we are doing. We, you know, we have taken Jesus Christ aside and we rebuke him. You see? And you better do it our own way, you know, because you don't get it. You see, that's what, in essence, what he's saying to him. And but when he turned around and looked at the disciples, so all the disciples are there, even though he takes him aside and then says that to him, you see? He looks at all of them, and he wants all of them to get the same message, because all of them are guilty of the same thing. They just, you know, were not as impetuous, you know, as Peter was, you see. And so he looks at all of them, and it tells Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." Now, he did not call him Satan in the sense of, you know, the devil, you see. He said adversary. Because, you see, an adversary is the one who withstands the plan of God, the will of God. And that's what the devil became known as, an adversary. But, you know, you can have an adversary that is an evil adversary, can have a good adversary, you know. And in this case, he's talking about, in essence, ultimately speaking, if you want to go that far, to the devil himself. He's not interested in the plan of God. He's interested in his own plan. And he's injecting those attitudes into the minds of people. And it is for this reason, even though Christ warned us not to set dates, he said, "You do not know the hour, you see, or the time. Only my Father which is in heaven knows it. The angels don't know it." And so, in essence, any one of us who makes up his own mind, "I know," and begins to tell people, you know, this and that and the other thing, which is not true, we enter into this role of the devil, Satan, you see. And we're deceiving people. That's in essence what he says to them. Get behind me, Satan, you adversary, for you are mindful of the things, you know, that is, you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. And it is because of that reason that many men rose up and deceived many. And they kept giving, you know, they kept giving dates, and they told them the Messiah is coming. You found it, you know, in many centuries, past centuries in the Jewish community. There were many false messiahs, you see, where people just sold everything they owned, and they thought, "Here we are, we're going to Zion, we're going to the land of Israel, the Messiah is coming," and they were led astray, you see. And it's pathetic what people have been doing to other people. Why? Because they were not mindful of the things of God, but they were mindful of the things of men. So they allowed the devil to enter, you know, either into them or to inject into them thoughts and attitudes, you see. And, you know, "I know better," you know, things like that. And so they were, you know, about to tell God, you know, how to mind his own business. You see, that's in essence what it is. And, you know, if we're not careful, you know, if we begin to talk like that dogmatically, that we know based on this and that and the other thing, we are in the role of the devil at that point. You see, we are the adversary, and we better be careful. So this warning, what he said to Peter, he says it to everyone. That's why he looked at the disciples. "All of you," in essence, he's saying, "are guilty of that. And you better all listen to that." And to this very day, he says that. So whenever, you know, we're guilty of that, you see, there is a little sanity in us, spiritual sanity, we should read these words because they're spoken to us on an individual basis, and this is what we do. "Get behind me, Satan! For you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." And we have known many men like that, unfortunately, and people put their trust in men, not in God. And so they follow the devil in that sense, Satan, an adversary of God, and not God. And even the very disciples of Christ, the apostles, can be guilty of that, you see, because Satan is not a respecter of persons either. Verse 34, "When he had called the people to himself," that is, you know, these disciples, and all the other people around, the multitudes, "and with his disciples also, he said to them." So this was a message to all of them. You see, wherever he walked, you know, his disciples were immediately around him. And some messages he will give only to them as they walk very close to him. And other messages he wanted everybody to know, you know, all those multitudes. And so he turns around now and he speaks to all of them. And he says to them, "Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself." And that's our problem, because we do not deny ourselves. We want our own thing done, our own will done. Therefore, we become adversaries and Satans, you see, against the plan of God and the will of God. And he says, you have to do it. You have to deny yourself. Don't think about yourself, you know, your own selfish desires at the moment. So you must deny yourself, and you take your cross and follow me. So, God's way sometimes may seem to be foolish to man. That's not the right way. It's not the good way. It's not the pleasant way. Doesn't make sense. You see what I mean? And God says, no, you better come to that state of mind where you say, not my will be done, your will, even though I may not understand it, and I may think that, you know, my way is better. You have to do it in every single case. And in this case, in specific, was talking, you know, specifically about the matter of deliverance. When? Is it today? You see, or is it when God decides that it should be? You see? So the people who were setting dates, they're not willing to take their cross and continue to suffer until the end of days, when Christ is ready to deliver, when the Father is ready to deliver us and bring us redemption. No, they want to decide in their own mind when. And they're sort of, you know, dictating to God, you better do it now or else. So people like that are not willing to carry their cross because they said, I've had it, you know, I don't want to suffer anymore and I want redemption, and redemption now. And I heard about one fool in Israel that actually, you know, in his own mind, self-exalted and deluded, he actually, you know, you think about it, it's so funny, but that's what he did. That's what happens to, you know, some extreme, you know, minds. He actually sued God. He said he was going to take God to court because God promised to send the Messiah and he hasn't done it. He didn't keep his word, so he was going to take him to court. Of course, nobody paid attention to him, you know. Anyway, they thought, you know, the guy's beside himself. Yeah, it shows you how far can people go. And so he says that to every single one of us, we must be willing to walk, no matter how much, you know, we can go through a period of time where we see all kind of troubles and sufferings and sorrow, and we say, isn't it the good time, isn't it the right time for the Messiah to come? You hear it always in the Jewish community, you see, you know, they have pogroms and wars and bloodshed and, you know, the Holocaust, you know. Well, what's wrong with God? This should have been the perfect time for him to come, you see. From our point of view, we become adversaries of God. And what happened when God didn't step in and deliver them? Many of them say there is no God, because if there was God, he would have been here to deliver us. So that was a conclusion that many of them ended up. And so you find a whole generation in Israel among the Jews who are atheists. They do not believe in God at all. You see, that's what happens. They were not willing to bear their cross until the end. And to begin with, had we been obedient to God all the time, many of the problems that came upon us would not have come upon us. So that was a different issue there. And so this is what he says to every single one of us. And on a personal basis, in our own trials and our own problems within the family, within the business community, with our friends, whatever it may be, in the society, in the neighborhood, no matter times, you know, no matter how many times we have problems and how severe it is, or within our own marriages, we should never give up, but we will, you know, be willing to carry the cross until Christ is ready to deliver us. He knows the best timing. So be it on a national basis deliverance, or a worldwide deliverance, or on a personal deliverance, God decides the time, not us. And when we decide, we are going to make up our mind and decide when, and therefore we're going to do this and that, you know, and we make our own mind and we make decisions and we do things. And all of us are guilty of it. We all know it. We've all made decisions instead of waiting on God, and we became adversaries of God at that point, Satan. And we don't think about it that way. And it takes a very spiritually, you know, mature person in tune, you know, attuned to the will of God to comprehend, to understand when it is the will of God and when it is not, and how long I should go, you see. For some people it said, be you faithful unto death. Go all the way to the end. Endure until the end. Not many people are willing to do it, and therefore not many people are willing to take the cross and follow him. And verse 35, for whoever desires to save his life will lose it. It could be your life, or it could be, you know, anything else in life. You say that's ultimate your life. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the Gospels will seek it, you know, for the sake of the tidings. When you're willing to do it for the sake of God and the sake of the tidings, well, you know there is a plan of salvation. It has to take time. It has to run its course, you know, 6,000-year plan. And Christ is not going to come before that point. Some people say, well, Christ can come tonight or maybe in 1,000 years, having no knowledge whatsoever of the plan of God. And so they decide in their own mind. You see, and they become the adversaries of God. And so this is what he says here. You have to be willing to even to lose your life for the sake, my sake that is, and the sake of the tidings, you see, the word of God, the teachings, the good news, and all that will come in due time. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? So you take things into your own hands, be it on a personal basis for your own problems, you know, and come up with your own solutions. And then you realize you didn't solve anything, you see. And that's what he's saying here. Of what value is it? They thought, well, we wanted a Messiah now. Rome is oppressing us. You know, we've got problems with our leadership, spiritual leadership, physical leadership, and all that. We've got problems in all directions. We're sick and tired of that. We're going to take things into our hands. And they began to raise, in essence, their own messiahs. There were several messiahs, false messiahs. You see, and they began to fight this and that, and they had war. Many of them were killed, put in prison, and crucified by Rome. You see, that's what he says to them. What do you gain by that? You may think that you have liberty and freedom. You've taken things into your own hands, and you became Satan's adversaries of God, because that's contrary to his plan. So he's explaining that within that context of that time, and within the context of the next 2,000 years, on a national basis, you see, on a community basis, on a personal basis, we must wait for God. Do our things, do what we need to do, do our part, but let the things that have to come from God come from Him and not from us. And when people do not know the will of God, do not study day and night, obviously they don't know, so they begin to do their own thing. And that's what He says to all of us. Or what will a man give in exchange for his own soul? You know, you can't pay for it. For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation that goes on, you know, for every single generation to this very day. You see, it wasn't only that time. Of him, the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. You see, that's the time of God. It's not the time of man. And yet people say, well, you know, I'm sick and tired. You know, I've waited for too long. I'm going to do my own thing. You know, just Peter said, Peter said after the crucifixion, well, I'm going fishing. You see, I mean, there's nothing else to do. He's not around here. You know, that's the end of the story. I'm going to do my own thing. Well, in essence, he was saying, I'm ashamed of Christ. You know, I told him, don't do that. You see, I told him I'm going to protect him. He wouldn't listen to me. You know, he just did his own thing. You see? Well, that's what happens to a lot of people. And that's the way we function, and oftentimes we may not realize it when we take things into our own hands and God has not meant for it to be. It doesn't mean that we should never do anything. We've got our part, so we shouldn't be idle on one hand, but on the other hand, we should know the will of God and function based on His will and not our own will, because whenever we get our own will, then we find out it wasn't really what we wanted. This is not what we bargained for. And that's what he's saying here. Chapter 9, verse 1, and he said to them, assuredly I said to you that there are some standing here who will not taste death till they see the kingdom of God present with power. And obviously, again, he was speaking spiritually because he knew he was going to show them a vision. They didn't get it at the time. Later on, people who read it, you know, they did not understand it either, you see. But immediately after that, we see exactly what he meant. Now, after 6 days from that point, if it was on the Sabbath, you know, the next Sabbath, 6 days later, the next week, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, again, three, as oftentimes he did, took those, you know, three people, and oftentimes the same, and led them up on a high mountain apart by themselves. All the rest of the disciples were down. He took only three, and he was transfigured before them. Now he had a purpose. You see, he had a purpose for taking these three people. He could have taken any others, but he had a purpose in mind. And sometimes later on, you see why. In case of Peter, you know, you see why. You know, the leader that needed, at least he was a leader among the disciples. He was not the Pope, but he was a leader among them. And, you know, he went to do his own work, and all the other disciples all went in their own direction. And then you see John at the end. James was going to be martyred, and he was killed. You know, we don't know exactly the reasons behind it. You know, you can just read the account and, you know, you may think about it. You know, it's just your own opinion, and it's mine at this point. This is not in the words of God. And then John, you see, he's the one that survived all the other disciples until the end of the century. And then he had the vision of Revelation, understanding that it's not at this time, but way down the road, you see. So you can see that Christ needed to give them a taste of that kingdom to keep them going, and encourage and uplift it and remember it for the rest of their lives and pass it on to others. And so he led them up on a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. So he, at this point, appears as he was before he came in the flesh, a divine being, you see. A lot of people still have a difficult time with that, understanding that Jesus Christ is a divine being, was a divine being, and is a divine being now. He became the God of Israel. He's the creator. He's the eternal, you see. He's Elohim. And unfortunately, many people still have a problem with that to this very day. His disciples, his people, they, you know, they developed that problem in their days. And they pass it on, that ignorance. No, you know, just a man, you know, maybe he was a prophet, but he certainly couldn't be in a divine being, son of God, and so forth. And there are many people who call themselves people of God, and they still debate the nature of Christ, not understanding it. Well, he was transfigured before them, and, you know, appeared as a divine being. It was not flesh and blood, and he certainly was not an angel. And his clothes became shining exceedingly white like snow, such as no launderer on earth can whiten them. And that's basically the brilliance and all the light of, you know, the divine being. And Elijah appeared to them with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. Now, Elijah and Moses, mind you here, they're not described in the same manner as Jesus Christ was. And obviously, at the end of the story, you find out that all that was just a vision. So it was not really real. It just, you know, God gave them a vision to see this thing. And then Peter answered and said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here, and let us make three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." I mean, he didn't know what to say. And obviously, it's a vision. And, you know, and this is what he says based on that. What's doing, or get busy and do something. Verse 6, because he did not know what to say. You see? So he said something. Well, if you don't know what to say, just, you know, keep your mouth shut. And oftentimes we don't have that much wisdom to understand that. We just think we have to say something. We don't have to say something. You know, when we go to the house of mourning and somebody's in terrible deep trouble, whatever it may be, all we need to say sometimes is nothing. Just stand there, comfort, hug, or just look, and then perceive and understand. You see? You know, the moment we open our mouth, it just becomes a nuisance and irritating oftentimes, especially when we say silly things. And that's what's happening here. He didn't know what to say, so he said something. And they were greatly afraid. And a cloud came and overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud saying, "This is my beloved son, hear him." You see? Well, he's the father saying, "This is my son." Well, if he's the father and his son, you know, is Jesus Christ, well, his son is just, you know, son of the father. That means, you know, like father, like son. That means of the same level. You see, there's a human being and there is a divine being. That means, you know, if the Father is God, so is the Son. Simple as that. Simple message, but how many people are willing to hear it? You see, later on, all the Jews, you know, that were willing to read this account, you know, read it, and many did believe and many did not. And then all those who came later on, in like manner, and to this very day, there are still those people, you know, that read these things and they don't believe it. Why? Because their heart is hardened, and they have no eyes to see, and they'll enter their own intellectual understanding and not to that of God. And suddenly, when they had looked around, they saw no one anymore but only Jesus and themselves. Why? Because it was just a vision, you see. Elijah and Moses and all the others, they are dead people. They're representatives of the law, and we've mentioned that when we went through Matthew. The law of God, and they're going to be, obviously in high positions also in the kingdom, teaching, you know, the law of God to all mankind. And now as they came down from the mountain, he commanded them that they should tell no one the things that they had seen. And Matthew makes it very plain. He told them, don't tell the vision. It was just a vision. It was not a real thing. Don't tell the vision to no one till the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Then he can go ahead and tell everybody then. You see? And that was a command from him. Don't. So as long as I'm alive, don't go about telling, you know, people that I'm God. You see, that you've seen me as a divine being. Because, just like he said in another occasion, you do not give your pearls to the swine. Where they do not have the capacity to appreciate it, to understand it, don't give it to them. And then, when they gave this information to the disciples, you see, it was for those who were going to follow Christ. And obviously many others just listen to it, but don't pay attention to it. You know, they just act like swine, have no capacity to appreciate it. And so they kept this word to themselves. They were obedient in this case, questioning what the rising from the dead meant. They did not understand the resurrection. Now they understand. Well, you know, some people in the past physically were resurrected and brought back to life, and then they died like anybody else. But they understood that he's talking about a spiritual resurrection when you appear as a spirit being. And that never happened before that. Elisha, you know, he resurrected someone, and Elijah and others. You see, Jesus Christ resurrected dead, you know, and they just continue on life. But to appear as a spirit being, as a divine being, they did not comprehend that. There wasn't much knowledge and information until this point for them to fully comprehend and understand. Even though many did understand it, the prophets understood it, Father Abraham understood it, but not everybody. It was not common knowledge. You know, you see a segment of the society, even you know, following the Sadducees, did not even believe in the resurrection. And so they ask him, saying, why do the scribes say that Elijah must come first? Now they know that he's dead and they just saw him in a vision. You see, so they want to know what's the connection here. And then he answered and told them, indeed, Elijah is coming first and restores all things, speaking about 2,000 years down the road before he's coming. And now, and how it is written concerning the Son of Man that he must suffer many things and be treated with contempt. But I say to you that Elijah has also come, and they did to him whatever they wished, as it is written of him. In other words, if you don't understand what he means, not only what he says, you would not get the point of what he's talking about. There was once upon a time an Elijah who was sent by God to restore Israel unto the law of God, to their faith of God, to the religion of God, you see. And somebody else came in the spirit of that Elijah and with the same commission, and that's John the Baptist, but that's for this generation. And then comes another one at the end of time before the coming of the dreadful day of the Lord. You see, who is going to have even more power even than all, you know, the first Elijah with signs and wonders and miracles, and somebody's going to be with him like Elisha, you see. And so he's talking about those three. And, you know, those who do not have the Spirit of God, as Paul said, you know, those things are spiritually discerned. They're not going to understand it. And when he came to the disciples, he saw a great multitude around them, and scribes disputing with them. So we're having a debate there, and while he was gone up the mountain, and then he finds out why. And immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed, and running to him, greeted him. And he asked the scribes, what are you discussing with them? And then one of the crowd answered and said, teacher, I brought you my son, who has a mute spirit. In other words, I brought it to you, but you know, you went out here, you went up the mountains, so the disciples were here, and they asked me, what do you want? You know, and they told them, and they thought, well, maybe we can try to do something, and obviously nobody could do anything about it. That's, you know, the gist of things here. And so he says, they said to him, you know, we brought it before you, and wherever it seizes him, it throws him down, he foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, you know, self-destructive spirit, that's what the demons are, oftentimes, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, but they could not. And then the man was pretty frustrated at this point. And so the scribes, obviously, were getting into the point there, you know, into the middle, you know, this commotion here, trying to come up with their own concept and ideas and all that. So that's what the debate was all about. And obviously, none of them could do it. And he answered and said to them, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. You see, because there was still not enough knowledge there, not enough faith, not enough devotion, not enough obedience to God. You see, not enough understanding and to be, you know, attuned with, spiritually with him for the disciples to do it. And for the people themselves who bring, you know, a person like that to have the absolute faith that it's not man who is going to do it for you, but God himself. So they were all lacking in it. And the scribes who thought that we know the problem, you see, and all of them were in confusion. And so he's addressing all of them, you see, not just the parents of the person, not just the disciples, you see, but all of them. Faithless generation, that's the problem. When people are not obedient to God, they do not have any of the faith of God, you see, do not have the power of God, and God is not going to use them, you see, to represent him or to do things through them. And that's what he says here. Bring him to me, since, you know, none of you can do it. And then they brought him, you know, that person to him, to Jesus Christ, and when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him. You see, that's when the spirit, in essence, through the body of that person, looked at Christ, that's the way it reacted. And he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he asked his father, and mind you, Christ is not immediately going to perform here the miracle that they wanted, because it has a purpose again. And so he asked the father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. So everybody was a witness to this fact, that that's the way this kid has been. And from a very young age, the demon was in that person. And you find a lot of children like that. If they're not trained properly by their parents, they become brats. You see? Temper tantrums that they throw all over the place. Everybody knows about it. And everybody says, look at that brat. You see? And when that happens, that's an open invitation to a demon to enter into the person. A lot of children, and of course adults nowadays, people that think that they are smart and wise and intellectual, they make fun of that, but they don't realize there is a real world out there, a spiritual world, both of good and evil. You see, spirit beings, and they're all watching us. Well, anyway, what's up at this point? Again, this is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.